Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of Dropping the Gloves. We don't usually do four, Tim, but we're back. There's so much to talk about, so we decided let's rally the troops, Tim and I, and do another episode because, boy, oh, boy, there was a game last night, and it was a barn burner. It was very exciting. Obviously, the much-anticipated Montreal Canadiens, Vegas Golden Knights, the Cinderella story, Tim, honestly. The Cinderella story, Montreal Canadiens. It has not struck midnight just yet. They come out and they win in overtime. Arturi Laikkanen scores, like I said, my conspiracy theory within the first 5 minutes. Unbelievable. They win the series. They win the game in Vegas. In Montreal. The fans are going nuts. The whole city's going insane. What did you think of the game? Just your instant reaction. How happy are you?
I am happy because I think when you don't have a dog in the fight, you just naturally gravitate to the underdog, right? And that's the Montreal Canadiens. And it's weird being a Bruins fan for life and rooting for them, but that's where I find myself. They're a likable team. The Cole Caulfield thing is just so much fun to watch. He scored again last night, four goals in this series. And Carey Price, so we talked about this like a month ago. Like if you could see any two players or any core veterans raise the cup among these remaining teams, it was Carey Price and Shea Weber. So the fact that they're going there both for the first time, and it's just really, really exciting. And the other biggest thing is just seeing the tweets come in all night long last night to you and to the Dropping the Gloves account just about – you eating crow and you being wrong, and pretty cute series win by the Montreal Canadiens, right?
You know what? I'm man enough to admit when I'm wrong, and I completely misjudged. Maybe I misjudged the whole North Division. Maybe I was just sleeping on them. I don't think I did, because we saw who the Toronto Maple Leafs were. We saw who the Edmonton Oilers were. And I was basing my assumptions on the North Division based on those two teams. They were run and gun. They were all offense and they were no defense. And then all of a sudden the Montreal Canadiens come in and say, listen, it's playoff time. We're going to transition or switch up our game a little bit. And we're going to lock things down, tighten it up. And the Leafs, the Oilers and the Jets, they couldn't handle it. And obviously Vegas, they couldn't handle it either. And I would have thought coming into this series, they had a tough series in the first round versus Minnesota, who is very similar to Montreal. Very, you know, very strong team. They play well. They have a good top four decor. They don't really have any outstanding superstars. They just play a really good team game. They dispatched them a 7. I thought Minnesota might win that series. And they go into Colorado. They beat Colorado handily. Obviously, I think they all played them 5 of the 6 games. And you're coming into this Montreal series. I thought they were going to have the confidence to kind of run right through them. And obviously, Montreal is a lot better than I thought they were. And they are just over. Here's the thing. Are they over exceeding expectations? Yes, because their expectations are insanely low. They've been the underdog. I would say in every single game, they've been the underdog, let alone every single series. So they are just blowing everybody's predictions out of the water. And here we are. They're in the Stanley Cup Finals. It's a great story. Montreal is just on fire right now. They haven't made the cup since 1993 when they won it. That was another Cinderella story. Patrick Waugh carried him to the cup finals in the win. It's very exciting to be a hockey fan in Canada right now. They haven't had much to cheer about. I think coming into this season, we did a little discussion, which teams out of the North Division could win the Stanley Cup, you know, to break that drought. It's been, gosh, it's almost 30 years now since they've won a Stanley Cup in Canada. And we picked Toronto. We picked Edmonton. Vancouver was in the conversation, for Pete's sake. And no one thought of Montreal. They had some good offseason moves like we talked about with Eric Engels a few shows ago. They are really playing well, Tim. And Carey Price is having a great season, like we said. But you pulled up an interesting stat after the game, and I was kind of blown away by the minutes that you showed. Why don't you touch on what you found?
Yeah, well, watching this game and really the whole series, I was kind of just noticing like that top four defensive pairings for Montreal: Weber, Sherratt, Edmondson, and Petrie. It felt like they were constantly on the ice, right? And I kept forgetting, like, who is their fifth and sixth guy? That guy, you don't even see him, you don't notice him. And anytime there's anything happening on the ice, it's those four guys. So we looked at the minutes played after the game. And it was way more lopsided and loaded than he ever would have thought. So Shea Weber played 26 minutes. Sherratt played 25. Petrie played 26. And Edmondson played almost 29, right? So those guys logged some heavy, heavy minutes. Their bottom pairing was John Merrill, who played just under 9 minutes. and Eric Gustafson, who played 5.5. And the crazy thing is, too, so, like, that's already a huge disparity. But the crazy thing, too, with Gustafson, of that 5.5, 2.5 was on the power play. So he played 3 minutes of even strength play last night. So it shows, like, how heavily they rely on the top four defense.
And this doesn't have to do, oh, it was an overtime game. They scored again within the first few minutes. So it's not like this is a regular game. If you're a regular game and you're Joel Edmondson and you're playing 29 minutes, that's a heavy workload. And it's not like these guys are a Duncan Keith or a Brian Campbell or a Scott Niedermeyer who just go around and it's effortless to skate. These are hard minutes that these guys are playing. And it just goes to show you, A, how well in shape they are. They're obviously, like, very, very, very in tune. And just the amount of confidence that these coaches have in these guys that they can just put them out. Because when you're looking down the bench and you're a D coach and you see, okay, Weber's completely gassed. He just came off from a minute and a half shift, and I got to put him out again because I'm not putting out Marilyn Gustafson because they didn't play in the third period. They didn't play in the second half of the second period. It was mostly a 4D man game, and I've been in that situation. I've been Marilyn Gustafson, and it
I was going to say, which one were you?
No, I've been in the bottom half of that, and it is so demoralizing when you're sitting there super fresh. You're ready to go. You haven't made a mistake. You've played fairly well, and the guy beside you is sucking wind like he's just ran a marathon. And the coach taps him on the shoulder and be like, can you go? Are you okay? Can you go, please? And he just jumps over the boards and he's completely wiped out and he's just struggling. He's straight legging it the whole way in the shift. When that coach trusts that guy who is 30% and you're 100% ready to go, it's game six. It says a lot about how much confidence the coach has in you, or it just says how really good these 4D men are. And it's really impressive to watch. It's old school. In the days of we're rolling 6D, we're rolling four lines, we're going to get everybody incorporated. And they're just saying, you know what? We have four really good defensemen. And if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to go through these four guys. I'm not going to get caught out there. Mind you, like happened to Vegas, when you watch, whenever there's sustained pressure or a chance against, there's a good chance it's White Cloud and Holden on the ice because those two guys got exposed a lot more than the other four did. And maybe Vegas should have taken a page out of Montreal because, goodness gracious, whenever I looked up and there was a grade A chance or a player getting behind a defenseman or a defenseman making a bad play, it was Holden or White Cloud. It's White Cloud, correct?
Yep.
And I'm just like, why are they out there during this situation? I don't understand it. And you never saw that happen with Montreal. You never looked up and you go, oh, Merrill got burned on that one. Well, he's stapled to the bench. The coach knows, you know, who his really strong defensemen are. And I wasn't as strong as the other defensemen. I totally understood that. Yes, it was a hit to my ego, but you get the situation. This is game six of the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not going to go out there when I got a Shea Weber sitting beside me. I totally get it. The guy's a cup winner, not a cup winner, gold medal winner. He's been through it all. Put Shea Weber out there. You know what I mean? He's a Norris winner. I totally get it. I'm not going to be too proud. And that coach for Vegas, I don't know who their D coach is. Maybe he made a few mistakes because, boy, oh, boy, those guys did get exposed. Not a lot, but whenever they were out there, it was like, ooh, that doesn't look good. And I want to touch on one more thing about defensemen. We had Shane Knighty on yesterday. Before the show, we were casually talking. I'm not going to out anybody or get Shane in trouble, but we were just talking about what's going on with Vegas. And he did mention, he's like, listen, there's a few guys who aren't playing up to their contract, and they're completely different players this year as compared to last year. He didn't name names. We didn't get into it. But I'll bet my bottom dollar he was talking about Shea Theodore because he was a shell of himself this whole series. He wasn't the Shea Theodore that we saw last year. He wasn't even the Shea Theodore we saw earlier in this season when he's running and gunning. He wasn't the Shea Theodore you talked about being a Norris contender. He was a completely different player. He was out of position all the time. All those breakaways Montreal got, if you go look back, Shea's playing too wide. He's not covering the middle. He's pinching and he's getting caught. A lot of those chances were because he was either being A, too aggressive, or B, lazy and being caught out of position. So that's a huge factor. When you have Holden and White Cloud, who are good defensemen but not great, and you got your number 1A, Shea Theodore, who you just rely on to be this horse to go out there and do the power play, do the penalty kill, join the rush, do so many dynamic things. If he's not doing that, what have I said over and over and over again? You need your defenseman to jump up in the rush, to be a part of the attack, especially when you don't have the high-end forwards. So, I don't know. We can go around the world of what happened with Vegas, what went wrong. I think we should talk about what went right with Montreal. Why were they so successful? What did they do? How exciting these guys were. What did you take away from just Montreal? Because arguably they outplayed them 5 of the 6 games, maybe 4 of the 6, but they were the better team this series. They deserved to win, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, Shane Knighty touched on it yesterday. What they do so well is, like, especially shutting down the other team, is they're just so aggressive, and they just, like, so well at shutting those guys down. They don't let the top guys in the other team play their game, right? They force them to make simple plays, and like you said, they don't want to. So guys like Pacioretty, Stone, William Karlsson, Marchessault can't get their game going because they're kind of playing on their heels. So Montreal just outworks the other team, and they know they're not as talented, right? Or at least not on paper. Like, they don't have the high-end skill, but they have 4 deep lines that can match up with anyone, and they just work really hard. And obviously, it doesn't hurt to have, you know, the best goaltender in the world right now between the pipes. When you do have the occasional odd man rush or the occasional slip up in your own zone, you know he's going to back you up and make that save. So it's just like, I was wrong too. I mean, I didn't think this was going to be a sweep by any means like you did, but I certainly thought the Montreal was the underdog and was probably going to be eliminated. And here they are talking about them going to the World Stanley Cup for the first time in whatever it was, 20 years. So it's really cool to see. And I'm now eagerly watching the next series to see who they're going to be playing on Monday.
It is 20 years. My math isn't that strong, Tim. I'm sorry. No, it is 30 years. It's almost 30 years because it's almost 2023. And you nailed it with the Stars. When you go back and you look at the goals scored for the Vegas Golden Knights, and it's not the guys who you want scoring. It's the Martinez, the Janmarks, the Holdens, the Theodores, the Peter Angelos, the Roas, those type of players, the McNabs. Like, where are their top guys? It wasn't until Game 5 when they had a goal from a guy who was in their top 2 lines, and that was Pacioretty in a 4-1 loss. Even last night, they get one from Riley Smith. Where is Karlsson? Where is Marchessault? Where is Stone? Where are these guys? They got one goal from a player in their top 6. That's it, one goal. And it's Max Pacioretty in a 4-1 loss.
Even Karlsson is like, he's put up some, I think, 14 points in 19 games, but only 4 or 5 of those are goals. The rest are assists. Like, the top guys aren't scoring, like you said.
It's just troubling. If you're the Vegas Golden Knights, what do you do? This was your year. You dispatched Colorado. That was the team, you know, that was a matchup everyone was looking for. You come into Montreal, you're supposed to walk over. You're not even in the Stanley Cup Finals yet. What do you do? You're not going to get any better. You know, you hit the sweet spot with the salary cap, you're able to take on some contracts with Peter Angelo. You load it up. I don't know what to do. You have 2 goalies who are arguably 2 of the top 6 or 7 in the league. Like, this was your year. It was earmarked for you. Where do you go from here if you're Vegas? You just run it back? Like, how do you – I don't know. It's just – I'm still in shock that Montreal beat them this handily. I really am.
Even the other day, he said, I still think Vegas is going to win, even when they were down 3-2.
If they had another game tomorrow, I would be like, Vegas has to win. They're the better team. But I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not looking at this the right way, because I'm obviously wrong. Montreal outplayed them. And Shane Knighty, he touched on it quite a bit when we interviewed him yesterday. It's will. It's that effort factor. It's the willingness to go in there and get your nose dirty and to do the dirty plays, to humble yourself, to realize, well, maybe I'm not going to deke out 3 guys. That Mark Stone play really bothered me in Game 5.
Did you see his quote from last night?
Yeah.
So I'll read this here. So Mark Stone, again, the captain, had no points, 1 shot on goal last night in their elimination game. The quote from him was, I got skunked in this series. That can't happen. I'm the captain of this team. I'm the leader of this team. I take a lot of responsibility for what just occurred.
Well, you should. You should take all responsibility. Every bit of responsibility should fall on you. You were the reason you lost. He is the Mitch Marner of the Vegas Golden Knights right now. When you're the captain, when you're the best player, when you're the guy who steers the ship, and you show up for 6 straight games and lay an egg, and it's not the fact that he laid an egg, because you look across the ice, and who's the leader of Montreal? Arguably Brendan Gallagher. He's the guy in that forward unit who is the veteran. He's the identity of the forward unit. He didn't do anything offensively. He didn't get any goals. You know what I mean? He didn't move the needle in the offensive zone. He was still super effective. He was still a guy who made an impact on the game every single night. Mark Stone was not able to humble himself enough to be like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to put up many points. I'm getting locked down defensively by this line. I'm going to go out and make a difference in another way. Instead, he goes out. He tries to do too much. Gosh, that game five goal bothered me for whatever reason. If you haven't seen that, go back to game five. It's the third goal. Vegas is killing a penalty. Mark Stone, for whatever reason, tries to dangle two or three guys at his offensive zone blue line. So he hasn't even gained the zone yet. He turns it over. They go back the other way. Suzuki gives it, or is it Perry? Someone gives it over to Caulfield. I think it was Perry. Caulfield goal. Stone doesn't even take a stride. He's just gliding behind Caulfield the whole time. And he could have put a stick on him. He could have put in a little effort. If you turn the puck over, you better be damn sure you're on your horse and you're getting back. You're the first guy back, not pouting the whole way back because you turned it over and you're just upset with yourself. Nah, they checked me. But I don't want a captain like that. I don't. I really don't. If I'm Vegas, I am questioning my decision of giving him the C because it's not working. When you want your captain, what you want out of your captain is to be a guy, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get effort. You're going to get compete level. You're going to get production. It's just, it's a bad look for Mark Stone. It really
is. He was that all season. This is a guy who was a Selke nominee. He put up points. Like he was that guy. And maybe just, for whatever reason, Montreal just frustrated and stifled him. But I don't think it's fair to say that you're not getting effort and compete from Mark Stone night in and night out.
Oh, you can say that. When it's game five of the Eastern Conference Finals and you are too upset to back check on the penalty kill because you turn the puck over and then the other team scores and you break your stick because you're a big baby, it's fair to say that. It's fair to say that, Tim. You have to. And listen, I don't want to throw stones, but I am because it's completely obvious. And in turn, let's talk about the positive. I know I get people don't like me talking about the negative. How good was Cole Caulfield?
Awesome.
How good has this kid been? Him and Nick Suzuki are so incredible together. And Tyler Toffoli, everybody forgets about Toffoli. They are so dynamic. This guy, every single game. Did you see the quotes when him and Robin Lehner went back and forth? Kind of.
Yeah.
Not so seriously, but Lehner's like, you know, I knew he goes high or he goes five hole. And I kind of baited him to go five hole and I shut the door and he didn't score. Most rookies would hear that and then shut their mouth. You know, this is a Vezina winner. This is Robin Lehner. He's an established goaltender in this league. And you don't want to get a beef going with him. He goes, no, okay, that's good. I'm glad he's thinking about me. I'll go somewhere else next game. And sure enough, next game he goes over the pad. Not five hole, not top shelf. It's just the kid's got some confidence. He really does. And he's backing it up. He is totally backing it up. At this point, other than Carey Price, I would say he gets the call or the Conn Smythe. You have to say.
Yeah. I mean, he plays the entire night with a huge smile on his face too. Like, I mean, just a couple weeks ago, he just joined this team and here he is now going to the Stanley Cup Finals and he's playing a huge part of it, logging some great minutes, getting the power play, scored four goals in this series, added three or four assists. Like he's the real deal. And it's just fun to watch when he plays with like that Christmas morning joy every single night. Like he's just so happy to be there. Just like, it's probably contagious. So you can tell his teammates love him the way they pick him up and when they're celebrating and stuff, just like, He's a new kid in town and they absolutely adore him. So it's really cool to see. And obviously the kid's got talent for days.
He is going to be a superstar in Montreal for the next decade. He really is. They haven't had someone like this. Maybe Koivu was the last guy who was small, athletic, but not, he didn't have the offensive upside as Caulfield does. He really is. Kovalev was a little bit more of a sniper.
So speaking of superstars in Montreal, I was thinking last night, so they focused on Pacioretty doing the handshake line for obvious reasons. A lot of those guys were his teammates and all that. And it got me thinking about the comparison. I want to know your thoughts on this. Do you think it's a fair comparison to talk about Pacioretty and Tavares, both guys who like came up, played a decade with this franchise, their respective franchise, and then the other teams, the teams let them go, and both teams have done better since moving on from their superstar when everyone thought it was going to be the other way around. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
I think it is. I think it goes to show that you really can't put all your eggs in one basket when it comes to contracts. And you have to be very careful when you sign these big deals that you're hitching your horse to the right cart, that you know this guy is going to lead you to the promised land, that he's just not one of these all show, no go type of superstars that maybe Tavares is. You know, he's a good player. He gets the jobs done, but boy, oh boy, Toronto really hasn't done much since they signed him. honestly. Then you look at a superstar like Kucherov, in turn, you sign him, and that guy produces in the playoffs, boy. He is an absolute animal when it comes to pressure situations. He's everything you want in a superstar. You don't hear boo about him in the news, and he just goes out and he drops 5 points a night. The guy is an absolute animal. You're itching to say something, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, so this is what else I noticed during the handshake line last night. Because I think it's like the guys are just so emotionally, like, they're just emotional in that moment, either happy or upset. And they just, you can learn so much, I think, from observing how they interact during the handshake line. Like, guys that really stop and talk is kind of the ultimate respect, especially among former teammates. And then some guys, just a quick handshake and on they go, right? So you kind of see, like Gallagher and Pacioretty had a nice moment, and Paul Byron and Pacioretty had a nice moment. Pacioretty gets to Carey Price. Quick handshake and on they go. They were not friends. They were not pals. And maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe it's just the emotions there. But I thought it was an interesting observation. Go back and watch it. Did not seem like there was a ton of love between those two guys.
Oh, I agree. And how sweet is it for Carey Price? Because honestly, at that point, Montreal, they had to make some room. They had to figure out which direction their team is going. And they went all in on Carey Price. They said, this is our guy. We're gonna roll with him for the next 5 to 10 years. And that meant Pacioretty couldn't be around. And so they dealt Patch. They kept Carey. And early on, it didn't look like a good move because Pacioretty's, like we said a few, last week, he's played pretty well for Vegas. I don't think this is his fault. Like everybody else in Vegas, for some reason, they didn't produce in this playoff series, but he's done pretty well for Vegas. So it's got to be a sweet feeling to be like, suck it, big boy. I know. hit the golf course. We're going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. But I don't know. When it comes back to the trades and the comparisons between the New York Islanders and the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens and this sort of thing, I'd like to say there's some kind of connection, but maybe it just goes to show you can't invest that much money in one player. And if you do, you're really handcuffing the rest of your team. But you need that. I firmly believe you need a guy who you can go to and be like, get me a goal. Go and make something happen. And you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and I talked about this, Tim, before the series started. The one problem with Vegas, they don't have that guy who they can say, you know what, we need something. We need you to go out, and we need you to produce. And it showed. You know, their first line got shut down by Dano, Gallagher, and Laikkanen. And you know, rightfully so. Those guys shut down the top players in the world. The Matthews, Scheifele for a game, the Winnipeg guys, they shut them down. But you know, I'm interested to see if they go up against Vegas, if they're able to do that versus Kucherov, if he's back. Because, like I said, he's a different animal. That team's been together for a few years. They know how to win. They've been to the summit. They've slayed the demons. They know how to win Stanley Cups. And we'll see. I'm not going to underestimate Montreal, but going into the Stanley Cup Finals, they will be the underdog. They will be the team that's like, okay, well, the odds will be against them. So it's just interesting. I don't know. I don't want to beat a dead horse with how bad Vegas produced. Let's talk about another player for Vegas who played well this series, Alex Martinez. I would say out of all the Vegas defensemen, he was their number two guy. Pietrangelo, he came in, he produced. He was a really good defense, don't you think? What are you smiling about?
Peter who?
Pietrangelo.
Pietrangelo.
What is wrong with me? Why do I butcher everybody's names?
I don't know. You've been saying that for weeks, and we've gotten some tweets about it, and I just let it slide because I don't want to interrupt. But yeah,
well, to our listeners, I'm not doing it on purpose. I really am sorry if it bothers you. Pietrangelo.
Yeah.
Pietrangelo. Whatever it is, I'm going to call him. What's his first name? Alex?
Alex. Yeah.
Alex and Alex.
So Alec Martinez. The whole thing, John.
Alex was their best defenseman. You know, he lived up to his contract. He was a really good defenseman. And their second defenseman was Alec Martinez. He was really good. And now coming into this offseason, he's going to be a free agent, Tim. Did you know that?
Sure is.
Do you think he's licking his chops right now going into this free agency? Because it's a flat cap. But the one thing teams always need is defensive help. And shows every season, every playoff series, every time there's a trade deadline, all the top players up there are all defensemen. Savard was the number one trade deadline pickup, which is bizarre. He's just like a shutdown demon. He's like Radko Gudas. So when he's number one on the trade deadline pickup list, you know teams need defense. And now you got Alec Martinez, a Stanley Cup champion. He had a career year this year where he puts up 32 points in 53 games. So his offensive game is there. What does he get? It's too early to find out where he goes just because of the flat cap. We don't know what teams are going to do once the season's over around the draft. How much is he going to get? He made $4 million this year. Just give me a ballpark number. Where do you think he lands? Really quickly.
Between 5 and 6, maybe. I mean, he is 33 years old, so it's hard to say like how many years he's going to get, but someone will give him 3 or 4 years at that price. And he won't be worth it in 2 or 3 years, but he'll be worth it now. And that's just the cost of signing the best defenseman on the market, you know?
It's a cost. Well, he might not be the best defenseman on the market. There's a little guy named Dougie Hamilton in Carolina right now who has been given permission, Tim. Go and see what's out there, Doug. Go and play the field a little bit. Go see if you want to find another date. There's been lots of information, like connections with him in Toronto. Does that make sense with Dougie Hamilton? I know I'm kind of switching gears. Do you see him going to Toronto? Does that make sense? Apparently he wants a big, big new contract, upwards of $7, $8 million. There's no room for that in Toronto right now. There's no room for $700,000, let alone $7, $8 million. So is there any chance that he goes to Toronto, or is just everybody linked to Toronto as soon as they're going to become a free agent?
Maybe they are, but he has been linked, and reportedly he wants a Pietrangelo comparison for his contract. Pietrangelo made 8.8, so maybe he's looking in the 8, you know, range. Others are saying he should be looking more at a Torrey Krug contract, which is 6.5. Maybe that's more of a better comparison for him. I think he's probably somewhere in the middle. Toronto, I can't understand wanting to move on from Morgan Rielly at $5 million to go sign Dougie Hamilton, when honestly, I think Toronto needs is like toughness and greediness and leadership. And Dougie Hamilton is not any of those things. He's a super talented guy. I think he makes that locker room even softer, even smaller. He's not the right fit for them. I hope they don't sign him. Actually, I hope they do.
Yeah, I don't think they will. It's always fun to kind of bring Toronto into every free agent that's on the market. But I don't think they're going to get him. I don't think they're going to get Seth Jones. I don't know. Toronto, I think, will have a very uninteresting offseason. Maybe they make one move. I don't think they trade anybody. I think they're kind of stand pat. They'll maybe add a couple more veterans. Like, they already re-signed Spezza. They'll try to retool their third and fourth line. I don't think Dubas makes a high-impact move. That's I don't know. I don't want to talk about Toronto anymore. Okay. There's another game tonight, Tim. It's a game 7. Islanders Lightning. After an 8-0 drubbing, the Islanders come back, cool, calm, and collected, go to overtime, much like the Vegas Golden Knights and Montreal Canadiens did last night, 2-2. Anthony Beauvillier cashes it in again, Tim, in the first 5 minutes. First 2 minutes. I am partially done my list of overtime goals, and I'm going through from the beginning. There are so many. I've already counted 6, and I'm not even through the first round. Overtime goals within the first 5 minutes. So there's a lot of them. And I'm gonna do a whole thesis on this. I feel like it's a mental mindset. There's a whole thing I'm going to do, Tim. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a five show special. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, so that forces a game 7. Those two games could not have been more different. 8-0, 3-2 in overtime. The same players, no goaltender changes, the same group of cast. It just goes to show you how hockey is such a great sport. It's unlike any other sport. I don't want to beat that drum again. The big question here is Kucherov. Tim, you're the NHL insider. You're doing interviews on your own now, by the way, to our listeners. Tim's getting calls and emails from people to go on their shows. That's how big Tim is right now. He's left dropping the gloves in the dust. Now he's some kind of analyst. You want to talk about that, Tim? How your head's getting pretty big? You can't walk through the door all of a sudden?
Am I a celebrity? I really can't say, but yes, I am. Kucherov right now. Unofficially, they're saying that there's no news on him. John Cooper said yesterday morning that he had no update on him. We haven't heard anything yet this morning. So I hope he plays, obviously. I mean, he's the best player on that team. He took a brutal cross check. I forget who did it. Mayfield, maybe. But
Mayfield, right,
yeah. Yeah, right under the back of the shoulder pad. There's side of the rib cage. There's no padding there. I'm sure he's got a broken rib, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, with a good cortisone shot and people play through with it at this time of year. So, and he's a tough guy. So maybe he'll be, hopefully he'll be in tonight, because I don't know how much of a difference does he really make whether on this game, if he's there in the lineup or not?
Oh, just a tiny amount. He's just a nobody, Tim. You know, he only has 27 points in 16 games. I'm not even counting last game as a game because he played one shift, for Pete's sake. You know, just a little bit. He just drives their power play in their first line and everything about that team. He's a massive piece of that team. If he's not there, the Islanders are going to win this series. Even if he is there, the Islanders still have a really good chance to win this series, because I don't know if you've noticed, but hockey players aren't the most forgiving kind of person out there. And do you think Mayfield, when he sees Kucherov again, and he's got a busted rib, he's going to go, oh, I better not hit him there. Oh boy, that guy's going to be a target, boy. He is just going to get hammered every faceoff, every scrum, every hit, every time he has the puck, every time he's on the ice, those guys are going to be targeting that side of his body. And they should. He's their best player. If you can somehow get him out of the game, doing something clean or maybe not so clean, you got to do it. You have to. So he's going to be laboring whether he's in the lineup or not. And I think that injury is the downfall of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think the New York Islanders win and they go on, and it will be a Montreal New York Islanders Stanley Cup final.
I have a question about the Kucherov thing. I mean, I know you talked about that before, where there's an injury and everyone kind of just will give him little elbows and stick taps in that area all game long to make it miserable for him. Is that something like the coaches will actually say, or do the players just kind of understand it and they do it on their own?
No, coaches say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is a 7-game series. This is like a war. And anytime you get an edge on a player, especially one as impactful as Kucherov, you do it. The coach will come up to me like, listen, Kucherov is hurt. It's his right rib. We got to lean on him. We got to get in there. We got to get under his shoulder pads. Do whatever you can to make him uncomfortable. That goes for broken hands. That goes for feet. That goes for any kind of injury. Even in scrums, if a guy's got stitches, I guarantee you, if I'm playing against Corey Perry and he's got stitches across the nose, I'm facial washing that guy every single time. I'm opening up those stitches. I'm forcing him to leave the game. Anything I can to get under these guys' skin. And if you don't do that, you're not doing it right. You have to do whatever you can to win the game. And if you're one of these people who's like, well, that's not fair, then you just beat it. I don't like you. Like, you have to do whatever you can to win the game. Obviously, there's things that you can't do. Like, you're not going to kill somebody. But everything up to that, I think, is fair game. Honestly, why not? Why not? He's got a busted rib. Are you not going to hit him? Are you not going to get in there? And you know someone's weakness. You have to. And you're darn right the coaches are telling you to go after that guy. Mind you, if it's a Barclay Goodrow or a Blake Coleman who's got that injury, maybe it's not a big of a deal. This is Nikita Kucherov. This is the MVP of the league. This is the Conn Smythe favorite. This is the guy who has 27 points in 16 games. This is the guy who's an absolute stud who didn't play the whole season and walked into these playoffs after a year out and was the best player on the ice. So this isn't some Joe Schmo. This is their guy. So you better believe the coaches are saying, you better get in this guy's grill. You better punch him in the ribs, hack him in the ribs, every scrum, every chance you get, you drive him into the boards. What's the slap shot? The guy where he pees himself. He's like, but yes, coaches do say that. They do make a difference, and they will tell you to go out and do that. I think you'd be a bad coach if you didn't say that. So that being said, who do you think wins this game? Are you still on the Tampa Bay bandwagon with or without Kucherov?
I mean, bandwagon. I'm not on the bandwagon. But, yeah, I think they're a better team, and I think they win tonight. I just – when it comes down to game sevens, I would like to think the better team's going to win. Vasilevsky's a better goalie. Yeah, I still like the Lightning.
You know, I would say still on paper they probably have the most talent. But, boy, oh, boy, what team deals with adversity more than the New York Islanders? It seems like every game they're down – they're always coming from behind, and they somehow manage to get the tying goal, get the winning goal, push it to overtime. They just seem to have an answer for everything. And I think in a game seven, in this type of situation, you need to have that kind of grit. And Tampa Bay, they have it, but the Islanders, for some reason, I don't know what it is. Maybe they did. They just want it a little more. Tampa Bay won it last year. Tampa Bay's playing great. I still am on the Islanders. I think it's going to be Islanders, Montreal finals. And I bet you, out of everyone in the whole world, not one person predicted this finals at the beginning of the season. Not a chance in the world to pick the Islanders and the Montreal Canadiens to match up in the Stanley Cup finals. You'd have, people would call you crazy if you predict that at the beginning of the season. I called the New York Rangers, for Pete's sake, not the New York Islanders.
You want to bet some breakfast on game 7 tonight?
I already buy you breakfast this week. By the way,
you owed me a few though. So do
you've, this is the problem with betting with Tim. He owes me like 5 breakfasts and I owed him like 2. And I bought him breakfast this week, and now he's already saying I owe him another one. When there is a fact that he owes me so many more than I owe him. And
well,
I'm not going to see
we're
him.
Even now.
Exactly. This is what I mean. So there's no point betting with him. I bet him $50. I paid you right away that $50. So I'm just saying, you owe me a breakfast or two, my friend. And
all right, well, come pick me up because I can't drive.
I drove you this week. I drove you yesterday to breakfast. It's just...
That was a business expense.
It's too much. It's always a business expense. Oh, my word. So, yes, I still like the Islanders. I still like the way they're built. Varlamov bounced back from that 8-0 shellacking. He's been playing really well. They're just a good team, Tim. They really are. They get up and down the ice. They have 3 lines who are really dangerous offensively. Then they have their identity line. The identity line. They go up there and hit bodies. Is that the worst name for a line in the NHL, the identity line?
What does it mean? It's just that's the identity of a team is their
apparently,
fourth line.
It is, but no other line plays like them. So it doesn't make sense. Like no other. I like the perfection line. I think that's a good name for Boston.
The Merlot line. Remember them?
The Merlot line, the HBK line. There's been a couple around, but the perfection line, I think, is kind of cool. And they're so good.
You know, my favorite line ever was the Senators like 15 years ago with Spezza between Heatley and Alfredson. Oh, that was so cool to watch. Those guys were so, so good.
I thought this was going to come with like a name of the line.
No, I don't have a name of the line. I'm just talking about hockey lines now.
Well, that was a waste. But yeah, they were a good line, Tim. You know, I was just researching Stanley Cups and when Canadian teams have won it. How many times Montreal's obviously won the most cups in the NHL. I think they're at 23. Toronto's won 13, which is amazing with Toronto. Here's the fun stat. Ottawa's won 11 Stanley Cups. Toronto's won 13. Ottawa won their Stanley Cups from 1917 when the NHL was started to 1934 when that team they left. I don't know what happened to them. So they won 11 Stanley Cups in 17 years. Then they fell off the face of the earth for 60 years. And they came back in 92, 93 area. And now Ottawa's back. They've won 11 Stanley Cups. Toronto's been in the NHL for 100 plus years and they've only won 13. So they didn't have that 60-year break that Ottawa had. I just thought that was kind of funny where they both started at the same time. Ottawa took a 60-year break. Toronto did not. And they still are within two Stanley Cups of each other. It's kind of funny.
Well, even like in the 2000s, all of those teams have been to the Stanley Cup except for Toronto, who hasn't been since 1967. Like even Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa, Vancouver, they've all been there. And obviously Montreal's going now. It's just crazy to think about just how are they not gotten back? And now they can't get out of the first round.
Oh, it's just we're back talking about Toronto. But and then I also saw how exciting was it? And my parents were there during this time. They said it was an absolute riot in Alberta from 84, 85, not 86, 87, 88, 89, 90. Of those 7 years, 6 of the Stanley Cups were in Alberta. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And this isn't the original 6. This isn't like 10 teams in the league. There's, I would imagine, 28 teams in the league at this point. Like there's this, that's never going to happen again. That would be like California getting a run of 6 cups in 7 years, just of those 3 teams. Never going to happen. Anaheim, San Jose, LA, and you're adding a team. Like it's just New York. Have they ever had a run of this way where New Jersey, New York, and New York get 6 or 7? It's just, it's really
Boston
remarkable.
Did that. Boston did it.
Boston didn't win 6 cups in 7 years. Maybe the whole area.
All the championships, yeah.
Good luck, Boston, in the next 20 years. You're not going to win nothing. Red Sox are garbage. The Celtics are a disaster. The Bruins are trending downward. And who's the other team? The Patriots? They stink. They stink now, Tim. They're not going to win a championship that whole area for another 10 years.
Who do you think wins the next championship, Boston or Toronto?
Toronto.
Raptors?
Blue Jays. Vlad Guerrero Jr.
So good.
Absolute animal. I use animal a lot when I, you know, describe people. I don't know why. But he's a beast at the plate. He crushes home runs. He absolutely tears the label off the ball. But they have other – they need some relief pitching. That's Toronto's problem right now. They have no relief pitching. So if they go
worse than baseball, I think.
Pardon me. It is. It's terrible. So if they shore that up a little bit, their starting pitching's been okay. They have a dynamic offense. They really do. And Bregman hasn't even played. So once he gets back on the field, their big offseason acquisition. Toronto's going to be dangerous. They already are. But they don't have to deal with Boston because they're trash. The Yankees are okay. Tampa Bay is always good. Tampa Bay is really good. I don't know why we're talking about baseball. But anyways, moving on. We'll get some quick hits. So Gretzky's going to TNT.
Yep.
They went up. ESPN got Mark Messier. What do you think about this hire? Why do they keep going back to these guys? I know they're Hall of Famers. I know. What do you think of this hire? Because Messier hasn't really done much TV. He hasn't really done any analytics. Do you think he'll be good?
I don't know if he'll be good, but I think it'll be good to watch just because, like, you know the personality. You know the player. He's obviously well-known in the hockey community. He's a popular figure, right? Even among people who weren't even really old enough to watch him play. Like, everyone knows him. So I think people will tune in to see what he has to say, and then maybe he'll surprise us. I hope he can't be worse than Gretzky, right? So I think he'll be good.
I have a fun little story about him. When I got traded to the Rangers, he was a coach there. And so I got to hang out with him. I got to interact with him just because he would skate with the guys who wouldn't play. So come playoffs, I was with him every day. And one of the most surreal moments of my life was when we were playing 2-on-2, 3-on-3 with the extras. He was on my team, and it was me and him coming down into 2-on-1, and I fed him the puck. He's on the off wing, top of the circle. Mark Messier, anytime he scored a goal, you can picture it, leg kick over the far pad in the net. It was just unbelievable. I was just like, that's insane. That just happened to me, because every goal you see of Messier, it's top of the circle. He's on his offside wing. He's taking a snapper. It's going over the pad of the goalie, far side post, and he raises both hands and he skates around the net. And that's what he did. It was so incredibly cool. It was just one of those moments I'll never forget. Then I got him a jersey, signed it for me. It was just really cool. It was just really neat. He's a nice guy. I think he'll do well. I don't know. Like, I hope people don't expect him to go up there and be like a Charles Barkley type of person or Shaquille O'Neal on TNT, whatever they do. He's not that type of guy. He's very composed. He's very serious. He's very smart, which will be good. But I just don't. Is it going to be good TV? I don't know. Maybe I'm just butthurt because they didn't call me, and I think I do just a bang up job out there. But anyways, good for Mark Messier.
You want him to call you just so that you can say no.
It wouldn't be me who would be saying no. It'd be my wife. I'd be like, honey, yeah. I got a job with ESPN. She's like, oh, can we do it from our basement? No, I got to move to Connecticut. No, we're not doing it. Okay. All right. Never mind. Tell ESPN. No, I don't want the millions. I'm sorry. I got to stay home. If I can do it from my basement, I'll do it. Oh no. Okay. But good for Mark Messier. He needs it. You know, he only has 5 Stanley Cups, 6 Stanley Cups. He needs it. He has 6 Stanley Cups, Mark Messier. It's a lot of cups.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. All right, so the new franchise, the Seattle Kraken, they hired a coach, Dave Haskell, Hackstall. Dave Hackstall, Jim Duggan. That's his new name on the show, if he ever is relevant again. I don't know. Coach for the Flyers. You've been Toronto's assistant for the last few years. Any comment on this? Because I don't know. He's a coach.
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about him. He had a record above NHL 500 with the Flyers, and what I did hear is that he was really good with Toronto's penalty kill and defensemen, which was kind of their bright spot statistically this year. It's where they did really well. So I don't know. I don't think anyone was too excited. Most people were surprised by this pick. I think Tocchet was the front runner, at least among popular opinion. But yeah, we'll see how he does.
Mike Babcock was kind of thrown around. He's coaching Saskatchewan College still. All right. Anyways, Eichel update, Tim, anything?
Columbus Blue Jackets are out on him. So Anaheim's still believed to be a front runner. We've seen a lot of rumors about the packages, but obviously a lot of teams are still going to be in on him. Flyers, Rangers, LA Kings. I think those guys are all still there. So hopefully he gets traded soon, because it'll be fun and entertaining to see what they get for him.
Every time someone says package, I giggle.
Do you?
I do. I don't know why. But I'm glad Columbus is out. It's a smart move from them. They're not anywhere near being competitive on that team. They need to, if they're moving on from Seth Jones, which it looks like they are, they can't acquire Jack Eichel. It just doesn't make sense to me. They need to retool. They need to kind of figure out what type of team they want to be. And Jack Eichel, gosh, if he went to Columbus, it would be another Buffalo situation. And he would be miserable. It wouldn't work out. He would not resign. So good for him. Get him in a sexy spot. The Rangers, the Kings, Anaheim would be okay. I don't know. I like Jack Eichel. I wanted to see him go somewhere where he can shine. He can get that helmet off, let that fro go, and just have some fun, you know? Just mix it up a little bit. All right. Another news story, Seth Jones. Tim, any updates on that?
So basically Elliot Friedman reported that he's most likely to be moved at the draft, which is not too far away. And right now the Flyers are believed to be the front runners there. So they also have some cap issues themselves. They probably have to move a couple pieces around, but Seth Jones is the guy that I think will probably end up in Philadelphia.
That would be nice. Their defense was just atrocious this season. We talked about it already with James Van Riemsdyk. So that'll be nice. Well, it'll be interesting to kind of follow that story. Anyways, everybody, go out, watch game 7 tonight. It's a big one. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Hope everybody has a good weekend. Thank you for the support. Go drop a 5-star on the reviews anywhere you listen to this. It really helps the show. It honestly does. It gives us a little boost. So have a good weekend, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.